November 26, 2008. For the last few hours, the city of Mumbai has been under a constant terrorist attack. It started at the popular Leopold Cafe, then the busy historic Central Rail Station, followed by gunfire at multiple hotels, at a hospital, a police station, killing many and wounding hundreds. The city is in chaos. No one knows what will happen next. The police are at a loss. Meanwhile, India's elite force, the Black Cats, are waiting for the go-ahead to take action. It's taking forever. Maybe they would never be able to step in. Until...
The moment they get the information, they are alerted. And in fact, they have a squadron of theirs ready who can be mobilized within a short span of 10 minutes. And the moment they got to know about it, they were sort of rushed there.
Welcome to Covert, a show about the shadowy world of international espionage and top-secret military operations.
Killing a terrorist does not become a priority. Priority is to take the hostages out and make sure that the hostages are not harmed, right? Because you may kill the terrorist, so what? I mean, what great thing, you killed five more innocent people. So once you are constrained in such a manner, then your operation also does get constrained.
I'm Jamie Rennell. And I'm going to take you inside history's greatest special forces missions to learn about the brave soldiers who risked their lives to terminate the world's most wanted, eliminate terrorist threats, and protect countless innocent lives. This episode is sponsored by Casper Mattresses and Euphemet, a new podcast. They were finally in operation, but the Black Cats were about to meet their match, an attack that was organized, planned out, well-armed. To keep more people from getting hurt and to take down the threat, they were the last line of defense. This is Terror in Mumbai, Part 2. India's National Security Guard, also known as the Black Cats, were in a race against time to take out the terrorists before they killed any more innocent people. Here's NSG operative Colonel Chandrawat.
From the time the word go is given to the time you reach an aircraft, you should be there within half an hour, 45 minutes. Within 70 minutes, you should get airborne.
The unit was based outside Delhi, over 600 miles from Mumbai, which is only 90 minutes by plane. But first, they had to get to the airport. They were already running behind, and holdups at the airport were not reflecting well on the team. But they were finally on their way. The team hastily started planning the operation en route, as well as they could. They still didn't really know who they were up against, how well these people were armed, or even what their motive for the attack was. At that point, their only source of information was from the press, scattered around the scene. By dawn on Thursday, November 27th, hundreds of journalists had arrived at the besieged Taj Palace and Oberoi hotels, where hundreds of guests, both local and foreign, were trapped. Among others, BBC correspondents Sutik Biswas and Mark Dumet were reporting from the ground.
I remember the rope line coming up outside the Taj for the journalists. In hindsight, it wasn't very safe. The distance was not very far.
It was extraordinary. We were just in a line. There was no, the police hadn't deployed to hold the journalists back. We were just there. Some of the bullets, sort of flew overhead. But I think everyone was in shock. People didn't know what was going to happen next.
There was no official government announcements as to what was happening or who was behind the attacks. The press could only speculate. Journalist Amy Gutman explains how they started piecing together what little clues they had.
Originally, when we first reported the story on the very first day that the events occurred, we were consulting with all of our various security and intelligence sources who were instantly making comparisons and contrasts to Al-Qaeda, because that is everyone's knee-jerk reaction. Is this an Al-Qaeda attack? Is this Al-Qaeda trying to prove to the world that once again, it can make a huge overwhelming impact and is back better than ever? And at first we were able to draw some similarities to Al-Qaeda. The fact that there were multiple targets and multiple sites involved, the fact that there were several attackers involved, the fact that there was a very high death count involved, these were all Al-Qaeda hallmarks.
Here, all of a sudden, you had an attack by gunmen. We didn't know how many, how well armed they were. There was a strong suspicion, as there always are when there's an attack in India, that it was by Pakistanis, but we didn't have confirmation of that.
Finally, there was a breakthrough. Indian intelligence intercepted cell phone conversations between the gunmen and their operators. The recorded calls became key in piecing together the events during and after the attacks. The government also got confirmation that the operators were indeed based in Pakistan. With this information, they had a better idea as to who was behind the attacks, as well as what their goals might be.
This was an attack by LET, a Pakistani terrorist group also known by the name Lashkar-e-Taiba. And their whole mission is to campaign for the Mujahideen in Afghanistan and also for the release of Muslims and to free Kashmir.
The region of Kashmir in the northwest of India also borders on Pakistan. Its ownership has been heavily disputed by the two countries for over 60 years. Vikram Sood, the former head of India's Foreign Intelligence Agency, explained.
The general impression in the West was that the Lashkar-e-Taiba is a Kashmiri liberation organization. It is not. It's a Pakistani-Punjabi jihadi organization.
Lashkar-e-Taiba had previously been involved in attacks on Indian soil, including train bombings and a recent attack on the Delhi Parliament building.
The Lashkar has three enemies. The Christians, the Jews, and the Hindus. It's also a philosophy that Al-Qaeda believes. They have ideologically on parallel paths. And they talk more about the globe, these chaps talk more about the region. So that's a tactical difference or whatever you might, or how you prioritize your goals.
They came to die, perhaps. And when you are in that state of mind, then it becomes a little tough to deal with the guy.
The transcripts of the intercepted calls between the gunmen and their Pakistan-based handlers were later declassified. They are translated here and performed by voice actors.
Everything is being recorded by the media. Inflict the maximum damage. Keep fighting. Don't be taken alive. Kill all hostages except the two Muslims. Keep your phone switched on so we can hear the gunfire.
We'll get back to it in just a second. But I wanted to tell you something. I'm a terrible sleeper. I sleep on my side, so my shoulder hurts and my hips hurt, and I sweat to death because I get incredibly hot at night. So I'm super excited to tell you about our new sponsor this week, Casper. I recently got a Casper mattress, and my body is like, why did you wait this long? It's so comfortable. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams to give it just the right amount of sink and bounce. Which is another way of saying it's a great night's sleep. Seriously, it's got a breathable design which helps keep you cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. And they deliver it right to your door in that crazily small box, and you're like, wait, where's my mattress? And then, poof, there's a mattress. Of course, at some mall mattress store, all of that would be really expensive. But Casper's mattresses are unbelievably affordable because Casper cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you. And you don't have to go to the mall. They've got hassle-free returns if you're not completely satisfied, plus free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. And you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep-on-it trial. For my listeners, you get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/covert and using promo code COVERT at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's easy to remember, right? casper.com/covert, promo code COVERT, and you'll get $50 off select mattresses. All right, let's get back at it. With the two hotels now under siege, the terrorists moved to their third major target, the Chabad House of Mumbai. Chabad houses are Jewish community centers and synagogues located throughout the world. There are over 4,000 in 73 countries, and they're typically run by husband and wife couples. Mumbai's Chabad Center, also known as the Nariman House, was opened in 2003. At the time of the attacks, it was home to the American-born rabbi Gavriel Holzberg and his Israeli wife, Rivka. She was 6 months pregnant. Information from the intercepted cell phone conversations suggest that the Nariman House was a key target.
Every one person you kill there is like killing 50 elsewhere. Get rid of those people. Kill them. You never know. Firing may start and they may be left behind. Do it in the name of God. Do it in the name of God. You killed one?
Out together.
Rabbi Holzberg and Rivka were killed, along with their unborn child. Four others inside were taken hostage.
They got Americans who also were Jews. So in one fell swoop, they sent a whammy of a message. They had even said later that an American Jew or a Jew alone was worth 50 of anybody else. So they were able to send a very strong message. And in fact, that story was a very compelling one for our audience. I think for any international audience or any audience in general, in fact, because that was a story in which a rabbi and his pregnant wife left behind a small child, a little boy, who again, you know, became an orphan in that whole story.
Meanwhile, across Mumbai in a luxurious Taj Hotel, even the terrorists were taken in by the glamour. On the intercepted phone calls, they could be heard appreciating the decor.
Did you see the paintings on the wall?
The bathrooms have gold taps. There are TVs with 30-inch screens.
So the wealth, something they had never seen in life before. And perhaps they didn't... They looked at that huge LED TV and said, "We're going to destroy this." You know, they were, in that sense, probably innocent about all this kind of thing. They had never seen it in life. So, for them to destroy something so valuable, and you know, it's ironic that human life was not considered valuable. But that wretched TV was. That's where they hesitated. They didn't hesitate to shoot a human being. That's how they were programmed. They were not programmed to destroy the TV. Only human beings.
I can't see any flames on the television pictures. I said set fire to them.
At 5 a.m., J.K. Dutt and his senior Black Cat officers finally arrived in Mumbai, a full 8 hours after the attacks began. They wasted no time in setting up a command post and assessing the situation. They had to deal with three locations, the two hotels and the Chabad House. Brigadier Mahalingam.
The targets were split. And the main target, the Taj Hotel, was a huge big area. Right in the center of Bombay, with roads, population, buildings, all sorts of things all over the place. So, what is important for the troops there is to make sure that whenever they use their weapon, they do use it properly, and that no collateral damage or no innocent civilian is killed.
The team was desperate to move in. But they were hampered by a lack of information. There were no detailed floor plans of the hotels available, and no one knew how many terrorists or hostages were still in any of the locations. Maruf Raza.
So Mumbai was administratively in a state of paralysis for some time, and no information was provided to them actually of the target area. So they had to do a lot of guesswork and improvise, which took a huge amount of time. I mean, you cannot take on one military activity in the absence of the other. So you have to secure the building, but at the same time, you have to also know who is inside and caught up where. You also have to know the ingress and egress routes, I mean, how to get in and get out. You need to know also how do you move up the building if it's multi-floored.
Making matters worse, their enemies clearly knew the locations better than they did.
Therefore, there must have been some other agencies involved who got them the boat, who brought them up to this point, or they came on their own, which means they are trained to come and land at a point. Then from there, you have to go to your targets. Taj Palace was a specific target. The Trident was a specific target. Shabad House was a specific target. They knew about it. To my mind, somebody had wrecked the place. Maybe one of them themselves had done it. Because if you land in a new city in the night, particularly hours where they are not very well road marked, street marked, so you're going to get lost. Even if you study the map. So there has been somebody who taught them all this.
The real scale of the challenge became clear when the Black Cats tried to establish perimeters around the target buildings. All three were in heavily built-up areas with dense populations and little room to maneuver. The Chabad House, for instance, was on a narrow street and had only one entrance. It was an easy place for the terrorists to defend, and difficult for the Black Cats to storm without endangering innocent lives inside. The locations were well chosen.
So NSG is you know, clearly trained and raised for this purpose, and that's what they're supposed to do. Cause less collateral damage, save the civilians, deal with the threat with minimum, you know, loss of lives and property. You cannot go with all guns blazing in a scenario like this. No, certainly not. In a five-star hotel where people are holed up, you can't use maximum force. It has to be precise force.
The eyes of the world were upon them, with the press on the ground in real time and all their own information being gleaned from the news. There was no time to carefully assess everything they normally would. As dawn broke, it became the second day of the Mumbai terror attacks. The eyes of the world were upon them. Pressure was mounting. They had to act now. Vikram Sood, former head of India's Foreign Intelligence Agency.
A state which is wobbly at the time of crisis is no state. So your reaction has to be sharp. It has to be heavy. It has to be, really hard. You've got to hit them hard and immediately. So that he knows that either he's going to be captured or he's going to die. He's not going to escape.
I think it's very hard to imagine the kind of logistical challenges that were involved in locking down all of these sites and getting them under control from the NSG's perspective.
In his final briefing to his officers, J.K. Dutt gave four final guidelines. No loss of innocent life. Try and take the terrorists alive. Minimize collateral damage and screen the hostages to prevent any terrorists slipping through the net. And with that, the Black Cats swung into action. At 6:20 a.m., the police and marine commandos were left to guard the perimeter. Operation Black Tornado was at last underway.
All right, operatives, we'll get back to it in just a second. Right now on the phone, I've got the host of a podcast called Euphemet, and I'd love to introduce him to you. So, Jim, for my listeners, why don't you tell them who you are?
Yeah, I'm Jim Perry. I'm the host and creator for the show Euphemet. Euphemet is really about paranormal, supernatural, esoteric, strange experiences and the people who experience them. So often we hear about these sightings, right? About, I saw this Bigfoot, I saw this flying saucer. Well, what Euphemet is more interested in is the people. So that's our angle.
Nice. That's very cool. And you do interviews with those people and have firsthand accounts of those interactions?
We do. You know, what's interesting about Euphemet and what's really fun about it is that we are boots on the ground. We go and find these people. We go and look at where they've seen these experiences. We're experiencing things ourselves. We're kind of pushing our limits and really getting our hands dirty. Just last week, actually, I was in Sedona, Arizona. It was me and my assistant producer, Chelsea. We hiked up the, or climbed rather, Bell Rock with this wonderful man named Peter Gersten. That's our episode coming up. We're breaking bread with these folks and getting to see it, hopefully for the listener, as close to what these folks really experienced as possible, and trying to communicate that effectively.
Very cool. So the listener really gets to experience exactly what the subject has gone through, and maybe even gets a little bit of a taste of it for themselves.
You know, I think audio is the perfect medium to convey these stories in a more heartfelt way, and to really get connected with these folks. And whether that experience is sort of tactile or not, whether we can explain what that is or not, isn't really the idea behind it. The idea is about, well, that's a story, that's experience. Let's dig into that. How did that transform you? How did that change your life?
That's great. Sounds very intense.
It's a little intense, I'll tell you what, but it's incredibly fun. I'm still alive, so it's all good.
Taking investigative journalism to the next level. I like it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Yeah, much appreciated.
Great. Jim, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. Operatives, let's dive right back in. When completed in 1973, the Oberoi Trident Towers building was the tallest skyscraper in South Asia. At 384 feet with 547 guest rooms, it's still hugely popular with the world's business elite. But on that day, in 2008, it only meant there were more hostages.
So the energy had to make its way through a building where I would assume virtually none of them had ever visited that building. I mean, it wasn't like a public place. Five-star hotels have a select clientele, and serving soldiers are not really their clientele.
See, it's a massive building, right? And they wouldn't have had the plans of this hotel when they went inside that. Whatever information they got of the hotel and its layout would be from the hotel staff.
The soldiers were forced to improvise. They decided to gain the higher ground by climbing the stairs to the 21st floor. Then they began the process of a top-down sweep, moving through the building, clearing each floor as they went along, gradually herding the terrorists into a corner.
Very important for him was to fix them in a particular area and thereafter deal with them.
But there were a lot of variables they just couldn't account for.
And you really do not know whether they are in the second floor, third floor, 10 men, 14 men, whatever. The second most important problem is you cannot identify them. You have to identify these people. Otherwise, you will end up killing some guests inside the hotel. So therefore, the complications are very many.
One by one, the rooms in the hotel were searched and guests were herded outside to safety. At 2 p.m., 8 hours after first entering the hotel, the terrorists were cornered on the 18th floor. There were two of them, and monitored phone conversations reveal that they were instructed to go out with a grenade, but they had run out of ammunition.
And we also try and capture the terrorists alive, if it is possible, so that you could get maximum information. But if it is not possible, so be it.
Both terrorists were killed, and the Oberoi Hotel was liberated. Part 1 of Operation Black Tornado was a success. 143 guests were rescued, but 24 were murdered. There was little time for celebration or rest. The Black Cats immediately hurried to the Jewish center a mile away across the city. At the Nariman House, 9 hostages were quickly recovered from the ground floor, but the soldiers didn't want to endanger the lives of other hostages by storming the building. They were further inconvenienced by the media, who were inadvertently providing intelligence to the gunmen as they reported from the scene.
It was all live. There was no time delay between what was being shown and what was being reported, what was happening, and they actually showed the Indian Army choppers trying to land over the Chabad House to carry out a rescue operation. Now we know from later that the people who organized this operation were watching those tapes and telling people inside on mobile phones that, look guys, there is a commando operation, aerial commando operation coming in. So be careful.
The handlers in Pakistan were in constant contact with the terrorists, and after carefully analyzing the intercepted traffic, intelligence agents felt certain there were no longer any hostages in the building. In the full glare of the cameras, the Black Cats launched an aerial assault. At 7:30 a.m. on November 28th, NSG commandos fast rope down from an Indian Air Force helicopter onto the roof of the Chabad house. The operatives split into two groups and began hunting down the terrorists.
They're firing into our room.
Peace be upon you.
I have been hit. Pray for me.
Where have you been hit?
In my side and in my leg.
After a fierce battle with guns blazing, both terrorists were dead. But once again, victory had come at a cost. Six hostages were killed, as well as one of their own, Commando Havaldar Gajender Singh Bisht, their first casualty of the operation. But nine other people lived to see tomorrow. The Black Cats still couldn't rest. The terrorists in the Oberoi Hotel and the Nariman House had been neutralized. But the greatest challenge was still ahead, the imposing and iconic Taj Palace Hotel.
I think for Americans, the Taj Palace Hotel could be equivalent to the Park Plaza, the Waldorf Astoria, again, frequented not just by tourists, but also by upscale locals, affluent locals. These are landmarks that attract a lot of people. This is why these were all considered very soft targets. You get a lot of bang for your buck. You get locals and you get big international crowds.
Guests inside the hotel included VIPs, celebrities, and politicians, which only made the operation more complicated. Not only were they valuable hostages, any mistake that led to injury or death would reflect badly on the entire force, especially with the world watching.
What is important for the troops there is to make sure that whenever they use their weapon, they do use it properly and that no collateral damage or no innocent civilian is killed.
Killing a terrorist does not become a priority. Priority is to take the hostages out and make sure that the hostages are not harmed, right? Because you may kill the terrorist, so what? I mean, what great thing, you killed five more innocent people. So once you are constrained in such a manner, then your operation also does get constrained.
Outside the Taj, the NSG assessed their options. They knew they had to take a methodical approach, but were once again faced with a lack of valuable intelligence.
The second problem was that the NSG was not provided with any maps of the location where the terrorists were holed up in. Because apparently those maps are not available either with the hotel or the civil administration or whatever. So they really didn't know how the building was built up.
The only information they could pick up were basic hotel room guides. The guides didn't show service lanes, passages, or corridors. The terrorists, meanwhile, clearly knew the Taj Palace inside and out. Journalist Amy Gutman.
They had this operation meticulously planned months in advance. They had done lots of recces, sending people in and out. Just the very fact that they were able to send so many people in and out from Pakistan, which should be an obvious question mark for anybody tracking their movements, which clearly no one was.
With the odds stacked against them, and without knowing how many gunmen they were facing, the Black Cats prepared to move in.
Once they're given the word go, they don't look back, they don't say that I don't have intelligence. Whatever they have, you make do with that and you just get on with it. You stop complaining. There's no time to complain.
Once inside, every step was an obstacle for them. I'm sure the lights would have been out. Most of the operations happened in the hours of darkness. I'm sure they would have to feel their way up the staircases. I know for a fact a lot of doors were jammed. I know for a fact they were either kicked or fired upon and opened. And that was giving away their location. When you fire, the terrorist knows you moved to second floor and he's waiting for you on the fourth floor. And they had to go about it It's like virtually counting hair on your hand. They had to go about it from room to room, floor to floor. It's an enormous task. Both hotels.
The Black Cats had to once again clear the hotel room by room. The guests had been told to lock themselves in. Most people were too afraid to open their doors. It was a painstaking process. With over 500 rooms, it could potentially take days. The Mumbai terror attacks rolled over into a third day, and the battle for the iconic Taj Palace Hotel continued on.
They came to cause maximum damage, and because it was a televised operation, the whole world is watching for 60 hours, they wanted to prolong it as long as possible.
We all thought it would be over pretty quickly. Here was India sending in its top troops. India, because of its experience of battling in Kashmir and other attacks, has a very experienced, well-trained military force. And so by the time they were there and had gone in, we thought it would be over pretty quickly, frankly.
That, if they had 6 or 9 gunmen, they would be eventually overpowered by the commandos, because so the Indian Army commandos are known for their for handling situations like this. But what we didn't know is when it would end. And by the time the siege went on and on and on the third day, we realized this was getting very sticky, and for the commandos as well.
The operation entered its 30th hour, but the Black Cats couldn't let themselves succumb to fatigue. They had to continue their rigid movements, keeping their tactics fluid to respond to any situation that might arise.
When you're a soldier, you go into an operation, you will give your best for first 12 hours. After that, you'll start tiring out, right? So 60 hours is almost 2 days plus, right? And you can't keep yourself so alert. So your body will ultimately, slow down to a certain extent. It's biological. But despite that, they went on and on, and there was hardly any reinforcements. I think I take my hat off to them, what they did. I think they were against all odds.
By midnight on November 28th, 90% of the hotel was cleared. They had rescued over 200 guests. Now, the Black Cats could shift their focus to finding the remaining terrorists. They believed they had cornered them in one wing of the hotel. As they slowly headed up a staircase, they ran straight into an ambush. Caught in the crossfire, the NSG faced their second casualty, Major Sandeep Unnikrishnan. His death only gave the Black Cats more determination. They pressed on harder, forcing the terrorists to fall back. In the early hours of Saturday, November 29th, 56 hours after the terrorists entered the hotel, there was a series of loud explosions. For the world's media assembled outside, it was unclear what was happening. BBC correspondent Sutik Biswas waited on the ground for news.
Information was very scanty. It was very sketchy because it was a siege situation. The commandos had gone in inside and there was a lot of fighting going on. And the only hint that whether the fighting was going on, whether it had kind of petered out, we could know from the explosions and we could know from the gunshots. So there would be these long kind of, you could go on for an hour without, we could hear nothing. We could sit on the rope line and we could hear nothing. But after an hour, we would hear a lot of explosions.
For the operators back in Pakistan, every second on TV was a victory, as the communications indicate.
The atmosphere is good. After watching the TV reports, the whole city is feeling the destruction. More than 250 are injured across the city. You have worked well for God.
Our commandos are so very well trained. There is no question of he is surviving. So the problem is, find out where he is. Spot him and fix him.
After 2 straight days of fighting inside the Taj, the Black Cats knew that there were only 4 terrorists in the hotel, and they were steadily eliminating them. By dawn of November 29th, the siege finally reached its endgame.
One more knocked out. So the body count was being kept track of. That was a sign things were coming to an end.
On the first floor, the 2 remaining terrorists were cornered. Outgunned and outmaneuvered, the onslaught of murder and mayhem was finally over. Mumbai was quiet. But after 3 days and the death of 170 innocent people, the city was left with terrible scars.
How dare somebody from across the border come right into the heart of the country and kill innocent people for what?
I think the comparisons to 9/11 are fair. I think they're valid. I think this is India's 9/11. I think if any good came of this, it's that India was forced to have a day of reckoning.
For the Black Cats themselves, Operation Black Tornado was a success. They'd had limited resources and a late start, but they had saved innocent people and put down a terrorist threat.
The NSG were really up against it. They were confronted with an enemy that had a number of hiding places, a lot of armory, and they did a great job to take them.
I remember seeing the NSG commandos in their sort of black overalls, looking absolutely exhausted. I was in no doubt that these were some extremely motivated and brave men.
All the terrorists that were there, barring one, were eliminated in the fighting. So the NSG's ratio of killing terrorists in such an operation, to my mind, would be perhaps one of the highest in the world.
It's a great organization, but must be fully supported, because it has always come out, you know, with flying colors in any operation they've been deployed.
And it is to their credit that they did this job with minimum number of casualties.
In the aftermath, India and the world started to react. Beneath all the celebration, there was intense criticism that the government took too long to take action. They had waited too long to call in the elite commandos. There were too many hoops to jump through, and it was far too late to contain some of the damage.
I think the energy apart, India as a whole learned a few lessons. One is that we must have a more decentralized system of dealing with terror attacks.
When the troops arrived, the entire nation was outraged and everyone wanted immediate action. But a sort of an action of this nature cannot be just put on a switch and things can't happen. It's a huge area.
Since then, changes have been made to India's counterterrorism plans, including retraining NSG commandos in anti-siege operations and having a permanent presence of commandos in high-risk areas to minimize reaction time if something like this ever happened again.
Well, we are better prepared. Yes, we are better prepared than we were then. But I hope to God it's never tested.
In the next episode, hostages on a hijacked airplane are being held by Al-Qaeda in the heart of Africa. But what do they want? And is the African dictator who is holding them on the side of the enemy, or can he be persuaded to help? The Israeli Defense Force is determined to find out and send in their special forces to bring people home.
He came in and they handed me a very small piece of information that said that an Air France plane was hijacked, that in the plane they estimate are 234 passengers, over 100 are Jewish, and the rest are others. The question was immediately, what should we do?
That's next time on Covert. Covert is an Audio Boom and World Media Rights co-production, hosted by me, Jamie Rennell. It is produced by Audio Boom's Ben Hosley and Rachel Jacobs, and by Pascal Hughes for World Media Rights. We had editing help by David Markowitz, with additional production from World Media Rights by Gerald Zabengwa and Damian Thorpe. David McNabb is the series creative director, and the executive producers for Audio Boom are Brendan Regan and Stuart Last. Thanks to Casper for sponsoring this episode, and be sure to check out the new podcast from Jim Perry, Euphemet. Don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite shows. And don't wait to be deployed to give us a review.